It's National Careers Week this week, and at UCEM, we are running activities throughout the week showcasing why the built environment may be a suitable sector for young people to pursue a career in. An important consideration when choosing what sector you might want to work in is how accessible and welcoming it is, which has a strong association with diversity and inclusion. Traditionally, the built environment has lagged behind in the diversity of its workforce. To assess the current situation, showcase some of the work being done to improve diversity and inclusion in the sector, and ponder what can be done next, I am joined by an all-star cast of leaders who are making a difference in this space. Joining the discussion is Teresa Scott, OBE, who only last month became Managing Director of Building People, a free-to-use platform that aggregates built environment careers activity, enabling people to find knowledge, vacancies, events and opportunities, and employers to engage with a more diverse range of talent. Teresa founded award-winning employability specialist Kennedy Scott, which she led for 30 years. Teresa has expertise in diversity, inclusion and employability, working collaboratively with industry and the public sector to ensure better representation of local communities across the country. In 2016, Teresa was awarded both Business Woman of the Year at the Network SHE Awards and an Employment Related Services Association Lifetime Achievement Award. Teresa was further recognised in 2018 for her lifelong commitment to the employability industry with an OBE for employability and entrepreneurship. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Good to have you. Moving on to our second guest is Bola Abisogun, OBE, who is founder and chair of Diverse City Surveyors, the first IRCS BAME network, which offers quality support services and educational training to BAME surveyors, who are members of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, irrespective of their physical location across the world. Bola is an independent management consultant, chartered surveyor, a fellow of the RICS, and the chartered construction manager. He has successfully delivered £8 billion of capital projects during his 26-year career, with a current focus on ConTech and PropTech disruption. He is a corporate member of a number of professional institutes overseas, including Canada and South Africa, and is actively promoting the surveying profession whilst nurturing a talent pipeline for future generations with a focus on emerging markets. Hi, Bola.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks for the kind invitation.
And thank you for joining us. And moving on to our final guest, Terry Watts, who is the CEO of the Chartered Surveyors Training Trust, or CSTT, which is an independent charity that supports young people who face barriers to entering the surveying profession. Terry is an experienced CEO of startup and mid-sized businesses, having run two sector skills councils, Deputy CEO at eSkills and CEO at ProSkills. He has put his passion for developing people, businesses and championing change to good use as principal of the City of Oxford FE College, International Director of Activate Learning and Managing Director of the Chartered Institute of Building. Hi, Terry.
Hi there, Andrew. Thanks for the introduction.
And thank you for joining us. So that is our all-star cast, all assembled. So first off, I'd like to ask each of you a question just to set the scene. We're looking at diversity in the built environment. So, Teresa, firstly, how diverse is the built environment currently?
Well, I would like to start by saying it's definitely better than it was, but we have such a long way to go compared to some other industry sectors. My own personal impression of the industry so far, as someone coming in from outside, is that there is a perception that embracing diversity means actually employing more women in senior positions. Of course, it is so very much more than that. I mean, for example, I'll share some more statistics shortly, but 5.4% of the construction workforce is represented from BAME background, which is pretty poor show in that respect, I think.
Okay. And then that's setting the scene there, and something we'll look in more detail when we look at each of the projects you're working on and what you're doing in the professional sense. And Bola, why is it important that the built environment becomes more diverse?
Thanks, Andrew. I mean, just building off of what Therese has just confirmed, the 5.4%, you know, I've been challenged by this question, why is it important? And it's important for so many reasons. I mean, there's a business case, but we've researched this importance to death, really. The fact is, if we're going to deliver a built environment that is conducive, relevant and fit for everyone, we really need to embrace the widest possible diversity of thought and therefore participation from as many different kinds of people as we can, men and women, young and more mature, and everything in between. So it's important morally, it's important functionally, and it's important from a business perspective. So it's really what we want to do with a diverse talent pool. You know, the question isn't why isn't really important. That's a great question. But the real issue, the real challenge is how do we maintain a diverse talent pool? Because it's all well and good enticing people to join, but do they thrive? Do they get the opportunity? Do they get to see themselves? Do they get to feel connected, part of it? You know, what's the long-term outlook really look like? So importance really will mean different things to different people. But I think fundamentally, we don't really have a choice. If we're going to achieve all of the goals we've set for the sector, one of which is carbon neutrality, net zero, gender balance, pay gap balance, we really do need to think about the different kinds of voices around the table. So it's a very important issue, and it's one that I think hopefully we'll begin to unpack today.
And that's a great answer. And you know, interesting that you're sort of saying move beyond the statistics, but what can be done when you encourage a more diverse workforce into the built environment? And obviously attracting that diverse workforce is obviously the first part of that as well. Terry, we had Teresa mentioning that she believes the built environment sector to be more diverse than it used to be. So that was my question to you. I mean, do you have the same experience? And assuming that you agree with Teresa on this, do you feel that the growth in becoming more diverse is happening rapidly enough?
No, it's not happening rapidly enough at all. You're quite right. And actually, Teresa and Bola both said it, really. The diversity is better than it was. It's not nearly as good as it needs to be. And I think Teresa and I got the same figures, actually. But it's the CIOB I got my figures from. They say 15% of the workforce is female and only 2% of the people working on site are female. Problem is, those figures, that one anyway, and most of them come from the construction sector. And one of the key things we've got to do is forget the construction sector. That's the sharp end of delivery of the built environment. And in the built environment, there are a range of careers and job opportunities and activities which go far beyond actually construction. And we need to recognise that as the sector, first of all. And I think that will help us understand and be more attractive to people who might be interested in affecting the world around them. Because as Bola said, you know, the built environment we live, work, play and die and everything in is something that affects our well-being, our mental health, our feeling of belonging, our security. And it's so part of literally the fabric of our society. We need a more diverse workforce to try and make sure we build the built environment of the future to meet the needs of the people of the future, the societies of the future. So we've still got a long way to go. And it's such an exciting place to be. You know, we really need to start thinking about it as the built environment sector rather than construction and something called the built environment we haven't quite defined yet.
And great answers from all three of you there, just to set the scene. And some interesting sort of talking points already, which, as Bola was saying, you know, we're going to unpack a little bit more throughout the rest of the discussion. And just now, I'd like to ask each of you a few questions more specifically about your work in promoting diversity. So starting with Teresa, diversity is all about representation. So can you start by telling me which groups are currently underrepresented in the sector?
We've touched upon two of them already. And Terry's absolutely right. Most of the data is around construction. Of course, the built environment is a much broader industry in itself. So we don't have really finite data across the whole of the built environment. So if we accept that and we look at, you know, the data we do have, so for example, 12% of those working construction are between 16 and 24, 22% of the current workforce is over 50, 15% are in their 60s. I think they're positive stats, actually. And that's about diversity too, you know, embracing the age range. 7% of 16 to 18-year-olds see construction as their first career choice. And 70% of companies that focus on diversity gain success in new markets. To answer the question earlier, why are people looking at embracing diversity? What is in it for them? Well, for a start, they have more success, they're more productive, they have a better, broader workforce, better represent the local society that most of these people are actually living and working in.
Would you be able to further pinpoint which groups are currently underrepresented in the built environment?
We talked about the 5% BAME. Again, it's difficult to find numbers across the built environment, but there are pockets that are probably better than others, although Terry might argue with me. I would say that surveying might reach more people from those backgrounds than perhaps some of the other professions. But on a more fundamental level, I would like to make a difference on the ground to also impact on sustainability, again, which Bolo touched upon earlier on. I live in Buckinghamshire, and if you drive into London between 6 and 8 in the morning, it's wall-to-wall white vans of craftspeople, tradespeople travelling into London to work on those massive developments taking place across the capital. These developments are adjacent or within local communities, and yet the workforce is not always representative of these local communities. That's got to change from a sustainability point of view, not least because there's also a huge social benefit in having local people take ownership of their own environment. I think that would solve a lot of problems that we also have across the capital.
Okay, and your work, obviously, with building people, it's working to support underrepresented groups. So what is building people doing in that regard?
Well, there are many disparate organisations that provide built environment careers, support and information, advice, a whole range of things to those diverse and underrepresented audiences. And where does somebody start? Where do they start to actually navigate through that? So Building People brings together these organisations, initiatives to facilitate discussion, collaboration, and hopefully long-term change. We support them to identify common challenges and then lead on the delivery of collaborative solutions, like, for example, the collective response to the Construction Leadership Council Skills Plan. We had a discussion amongst our community and put in a collective response. So collaboration is everything. The Building People Communities Network is open to all organisations and initiatives that work with diverse audiences to facilitate those careers in the built environment. And we meet on a quarterly basis. Membership is free, and we ask you to join in by sharing opportunities, content, vacancies via the aggregating and connecting platform, which is just such a fantastic resource. And this is how we join the dots and improve diversity across the built environment, bringing everybody together and giving that access to those local communities.
What milestones have been achieved by Building People so far, and what is the strategy for Building People going forward?
Okay. Well, we have a special section on our website that features our community of diverse organisations reaching out to those diverse audiences, and it's very comprehensive. We cover organisations providing support and direction to a range of individuals, including BME, ex-offenders, ex-military, LGBTQ, youth, refugees and women. So it's quite a broad reach. So anybody from those different groups looking for guidance on how to find a job within the built environment should be able to find somebody on our website within those different sections to give them a steer in the right direction. And I'm sure Bolo will know more about some of these than I probably do, having been in the industry longer than me. But we have, for example, Black Professionals in Construction, BAME in Property, is an organisation for Black, Asian, minority, ethnic groups, and non-BAME professionals who are passionate about increasing ethnic diversity in the property and planning sector. And that's just one example. So we have a wide range. I think Building Heroes is another one, working with ex-military. But you can join the website. You can register on the website for free. And our strategy is first and foremost to ensure that we continue to provide that free access to the individual end user who's looking for support, either to get into a career or looking for job opportunities or training opportunities in their local environment. Then we want to look at where there are distinct gaps in provision and seek to fill these gaps. And thirdly, we are working on growing this amazing portal to do more for the employers looking for staff and the communities working with these diverse audiences. So possibly giving more longer term support to particularly around SMEs, because a lot of jobs are to be found within the small organisations, and they don't necessarily have the HR support or the infrastructure to really go further with their EDI policies. So we're there to help those organisations too. But collaboration is key to our strategy, and we're talking to some really exciting lead bodies and professional organisations at the moment to develop some clear competencies around EDI for the industry, seeking to improve the experience of the individual and encourage much better representation of all the groups we work with across the built environment. Of course, bringing all of those people together under one all singing, all dancing portal. So get involved.
Really good overview of what Building People does and how it's supporting plenty of different groups to work within the built environment and access those opportunities, which then feed into creating a more diverse built environment. So moving on to Diverse City Surveyors. Bolla, can you talk me through Diverse City Surveyors' journey, please?
Yes, I mean, it was just interesting. You know, I talk about my journey and the journey of Diversity Surveyors. It was interesting listening to Teresa there. I've been a big fan of Building People. I'd like to think I was a founding member already of the idea with Rebecca back in the day, and that's got to be at least nearly 20 years ago. Christ. That, you know, that just shows how long this conversation has been on the lips of some change agents, one of whom, you know, Rebecca is one, and obviously Teresa now joining us as MD is amazing. But Diversity Surveyors for me, and the journey of DCS, as we now refer to ourselves, was really born out of frustration. I've got to be honest with you. It is, you know, I graduated 94, qualified 99. I literally hated every day of those 5 years in the industry. Why? Because I didn't feel part of it. I didn't feel connected. I didn't see people like me in senior positions. I didn't see people like me in middle management positions. There was very few coming through. The cohort of us that were around back then in the early 2000s were continuously overlooked for all sorts of things. And so many of my peer group left the UK, and I was the dreamy optimist to stay behind and decided to do something about it. That led to me setting up or looking to set up an informal network. And at the time, it was called the Black Surveyors Club. But back then, the Black Surveyors Club was just considered too radical. So I went away and came up with Diverse City Surveyors, because the aspiration was at that time to set up a network in every city across the globe. Big vision, and it still largely exists. And we've done some of that, but that was the high-level overview of why Diversity Surveyors were set up and the reason for setting it up. And it's regrettable that even after our official launch was 2005, it was accepted by the profession as a viable network and being in 2017. And in 2022, we are now recognized as the de facto reference point for non-traditional talent. I don't like to use the word the BAME talent pool, because actually we're bigger than that. We're more than that now, even though that was our premise of origin. So it's the non-traditional talent pool that we're really batting for. But that also includes our allies who are, you know, from all kinds of backgrounds, white, English, Irish, you name it, across the Eastern Bloc as well. So we've come a long way, but the journey, regrettably, is probably now more relevant than it was 22 years ago. Because the conversation hasn't really moved. The conversation is nuanced and it's changed. And now it's about, for me, it's about senior level representation. That's the one thing that hasn't changed in 22 years. If you look at the landscape of senior professionals today, it still looks the same as it looked, for my eyes, as it did in early 2000. So that's a bit about the journey behind Diversity Surveyors. And what do we do? Everything from culturally competent support, i.e. we have a range of board members. We've got Chinese, Jamaican, African, Kenyan. We've got English representation on the board, and we basically design support systems informally to support the non-traditional talent pool. And they feel comfortable. One of the things that we have in our gift is the breadth of representation at board level. So they see us as a go-to, oh, I recognize, I can empathize, I can feel part of your story, and I can resonate with your why. And that's our gift that we have been able to scale up and offer to many more people. But from a high-level overview, that's the story behind our why. Mm. And it's regrettable that it's still relevant today.
Yeah, really, really interesting to hear, you know, the journey and some of the sort of touch points along the way. And it born out of frustration, you say, that was the why. And also the kind of achingly slow progress to being the de facto network recognised by RSCS. You say 2005 you set it up, and then it's only this year that you feel it's at that stage. Yeah, really fascinating insight there into it all. I mean, my next question was going to be what inspired you, but I think you kind of touched upon that. But is there anything else which isn't covered in your previous answer on the inspiration for it?
Yeah, the inspiration is really, obviously it's related, but it's completely separate to the journey, because the inspiration, what was my thinking when I decided to go ahead and set this thing up? It was because I didn't want the next generation coming behind me to have the same lived experience, right? And that was the inspiration. Have I succeeded? Have we succeeded? I would struggle to say yes, but I'd like to think that we've moved the dial, particularly in a post-George Floyd environment where everyone, corporate whitewash included, has come on board and said, well, actually, yes, we do need to do something about this challenge that we know nothing of and have remained distanced from the conversation and haven't really challenged ourselves about getting involved in the conversation. And it's all about the next generation. So the inspiration was to guide and ensure that two things happened. Firstly, what I call the leaky pipe was fixed. The leaky pipe is a term I use to describe the fact that we have lots of talented people join, but they don't stay. And that talent release, that talent or lack of talent retention, is largely because we have so many challenges in our sector, particularly in surveying, which has historically always been a white, male-led, homogenous environment and not very inclusive, i.e. through representation or through actions and words. So the next generation coming through shouldn't have to endure what I went through 20 years ago. Today, that shouldn't happen. And equally, the need to understand the cultural behaviors of the various stakeholders is another reason for my original inspiration. I felt back then that people just didn't understand my background, my being, my lack of social capital, my lack of connectivity, my first generation status. People didn't really understand that. And it's still a challenge today for the next generation coming through. So I think the inspiration was well placed. But have we succeeded? Have I succeeded? No. But what I have done is shared my story. Mm. And in sharing my story, I'm able to inspire many to consider at least a career in surveying in its widest possible context. And I like Terry's reference to the fact that we shouldn't be calling ourselves siloed construction, surveying, engineering, architecture. We are the built environment. And from a built environment perspective, the figures are even more harrowing. I mean, I recall Teresa mentioning the 5.4% construction BAME. In actual fact, we declared at our first and only AGM in 2019 that it was 1.5% BAME in surveying. And if you break down the 1.5% in 2019 into Black, Asian, minority, ethnic, it would just scream at you, we have a problem. But yet, I've been inspired to continue. Many have come on board to join the journey. But it's, you know, like Terry said, we have a ton of work to do, really. We've got a big job on our hands to even just to facilitate an environment where people want to stay. Mm. Right? We've got to do better. We can do better. We can do better. But that's the inspiration, Andrew. That was the inspiration.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the original inspiration, because it's really clear from your answer that there's still such a huge drive which you have to be changing things, you know, right now, you know, 22 years on with Diverse City Surveyors. Clearly, it's still lots which you want to achieve, and it's really inspiring that you talk about your journey and how you want to make others feel accepted from the get-go as well. I mean, you talk about some of the difficulties as well. And also, I was intrigued to know about how difficult was it originally to set up Diverse City Surveyors?
Well, you know, I don't do things by conventional routes, I'm afraid. I've been a bit of a disruptor, which I've kind of earned that moniker, and Terry knows a lot about the background and my reference to disruption. And it's more tech disruption. I mean, that's why I love technology so much, because it just doesn't care. It just gets stuff done, and you either come on board and accept or you don't, or whatever the case is. But what have we achieved since the original launch? We've achieved quite a lot in terms of awareness. We've helped a significant number of individuals become qualified and chartered, both domestically in the UK and overseas, more in Africa and the Caribbean, and latterly North America, because it's just a global environment that we play in now. The real challenge for me at the moment, in terms of looking to the future, it's really about the cultural competency of leaders. I want to focus on the senior leaders, because that's the only way that we're going to allow all of this great work that Building People is doing, that CSTT are doing. And I've been involved with CST for 2005. Was that 17 years, Terry? I was profiled by CSTT in 2005, ironically. I just think that we've got to do better to help people stay in the sector. We sell and we talk a good game, but fundamentally, the cultural challenge that we have at senior level is probably the biggest blocker. It's bigger than technology, and technology is coming in and doing us some amazing things. But the biggest challenge we have is technology. And I'm not sure what we can do to move the dial in that regard, particularly on a cultural competency level, which speaks to people's why. You know, our collective differences must become our collective strength. But if we don't appreciate each other, it's just not going to happen.
So you're talking there about, you know, some of the achievements, and then where you're looking to in the future. So and it's the senior leadership, which interestingly here at UCEM we've signed up to the 30% club. So that concerns the FTSE 100 or 500, I can't remember which companies, and ensuring that there's at least 30% female representation at board level, which is something which certainly here is something we do have, but is something which could be applied potentially to the built environment more widely, and to sort of seek greater representation in the sort of highest corridors of power within the built environment. So yeah, really, really fascinating to hear your journey, Bolo, with Diverse City Surveyors, you know, after Teresa's with Building People. And just finally, onto CSTT. So Terry, how long have you been involved with the Chartered Surveyors Training Trust?
It's 2 or 3 years now. It's not as long as Bolo. But I kind of wandered into it. I was the managing director of the CIB for a couple of years, and then left there. And just at the time when they were going to close the Chartered Surveyors Training Trust, because it was set up in the 80s by the Worshipful Company of Surveyors to help people on a thing called what was the Youth Training Scheme get into surveying. So people from non-traditional backgrounds to get into surveying, because there's, I think, I'm not sure if Bolo or Teresa said it, but and the recent survey, the Bridge Report, Bridge Organisation, forgot what they are now, they said that they interviewed people in property, and 45% of the people who were in the property sector come from selective or private education. And that compares to about 15% of, I mean, it might be 7%. It's a very low number who actually go through that. So it's a very disproportionate amount of people in the surveying sector, in that part of surveying particularly, who are represented there. Mm. So the CSTT was set up to try and help people from non-traditional routes into the surveying sector. And they were going to close it down. They did a lot of apprentices for many years. Then government decided that they didn't want an organisation like the CSTT, who kind of brokered between employers and training providers to deliver apprenticeships. They wanted to do training providers to do it, so there was no role for CST to do that anymore. So we're going to close it down. Then one of the old alumni passed away very sadly, and fortunately for the CSTT, left quite a bit of money behind. And so they They had a new injection of cash, decided to re-energise it. So I was asked to give it a new direction, which is quite a dangerous thing to ask someone like me to do, because this fits now very much with my passions as well, which does chime very much with Teresa's and Bollers, in that my thing is I think young people need to aspire to do a lot more than they see in front of them. And how do we give them that inspiration? How do we make them aware of the opportunities? Because I come from East London, and I was very lucky in that I'm very old now, so it was a long while ago. I was the first in my family to do O-levels or A-levels or go to university. And of my friends, 300 started at North Romford Comprehensive with me back in the 70s and on the first day. And 7 years at school, yeah, after I'd done my A-levels, three of us went on to university. Okay, so the others didn't do that, but there were some really bright, really capable people there. And my aim in life is to try and give those bright and capable people who don't think academia is for them the vision that the built environment offers amazing careers for people who are practically minded as well as academically gifted. And so that's what I'm about. And fortunately, the board at the CSTT have allowed me to do that. And so what we are trying to do is to try and create a pipeline of interest of young people in the built environment. We do that by, you've started me now, Andrew, so I'm going to continue if you don't mind. and we do that by have a program called My Environment, My Future, which is free to anyone to use. And what it does, very simple, is every secondary school teaches GCSE geography. And there are three or four awarding bodies, and every awarding body has a module which is called the Urban Environments Module. And what we do is we provide teaching materials for teachers to use to deliver that Urban Environments Module. They've got their own materials already, but they can use ours if they want to. They can take bits of ours and use that as well. And all it does is in those materials, we embed careers information about what careers would be. So rather than just saying someone plans something, we say actually a planning surveyor would have looked at this and they'll have done this and they'll have done that and how it all works. And we explain that to them in the materials. We give examples of young, recently qualified surveyors and professionals in the built environment. And we point out to them resources that show them how important the built environment is to their world. Because young people are inspired by the fact that the built environment is responsible for 40% of the greenhouse gases in the world. And if only they could do a better job than we've done in creating the built environment for the future, they can make that down to 20% or make it even carbon neutral one day. And they have a role to play in that. So we can explain to them how that works. And we do that through the materials. And all we're trying to do then is to say, OK, this built environment thing is quite interesting. Let's find out more about it. And then we work through, actually, not just saying this because Teresa's here, but it's actually true. We are part of, I was also part of setting up Building People. I got helped, Rebecca get it off the ground in the early days. And what we do then is work with our partners in Building People in pointing the youngsters and the schools and the teachers through to other things they can do. So if you've got youngsters interested, well, there's a qualification offered called Design Engineer Construct. Perhaps your school should offer that, or the Construction Youth Trust offer training for people. There's a number of companies like UCM yourselves who offer apprenticeships. Why don't you go and see what they're doing? So we'd end up acting as a signpost to other people's programs to try and help them nurture that interest that we hopefully have ignited in the built environment. So it's very much a collaborative initiative, and that's what we're trying to do. And the idea is that we reach the difficult to reach parts of the sector. And it's funny, we talked about obvious diversity in terms of gender or race and so on, but actually it's economic background as well. And we need to address that issue too. And if you look at where the industry applies its efforts in trying to make the sector more diverse, in fact, in almost everything, because a lot of the capital investment is done in London, most of the work is done in London. Not that it shouldn't be done in London, but for example, I live in Oxfordshire, and I was asked to go to a careers fair in one of the London schools, East London schools. I turned up there, and we were queuing outside the door. There was CSTT, there was RICS, there was the Institute of Civil Engineers, there was, I think, Murphy's, I think there was Robert McAlpine, and there were loads of us all there, about 20 stands, and about half of them were something to do with the built environment. If I go to the similar one near the school near me where my kids go, no one from the built environment has ever crossed their path, because there's no big development projects around here, no Section 106 budgets going, and no boxes to tick. And what we've really got to do, we really, really have got to do, is the money that we get, the industry gets, for doing good things around the construction projects it does, need to be focused on the local area, but also some of it needs to be spread across the country. Because we can't, if we're going to try and in get the workforce for the future we need. And we need hundreds of thousands of people, folks. We don't just need a few. We've got to address all of those parts of the country. So for CSTT, our objective is, and the reason we've chosen geography to open the pipeline of interest, is that we want to reach all of the schools in the UK, all the secondary schools, all 4,197 of them. We've got 260 so far, which I think makes us the biggest schools programme in the sector, in the built environment sector, single programme, I think, anyway. Go Construct might get a few more different applications, but I don't, in terms of outreach and going out to them, I think we're the biggest programme. And isn't that great? We've reached 6% of the schools. So it's not going to cut it, really. We need to reach at least 10 times that to try and have an impact on the diversity of the workforce we're going to attract in the future. So I think that's our role to do. And so we've got a programme which links to GCSE geography, and it's free, and it doesn't take any training to deliver. And at the end of it, the school can do a competition, and an employer, we'd love to go in and talk to them about the built environment and tell them what they do and advise them on how to win the competition. That would be great. They do the same thing at A-level as well. There's another A-level program, which is a similar, same thing, just at A-level level, because all of the A-levels have a module which is about changing the urban environment, and we've linked to that. And we've also got an after-schools club. We didn't want to do an extracurricular activity, but the teachers asked us for one. So we've got an after-school club at the moment, which is basically delivering the competition element. And just starting to, in fact, I've just approached my first teacher today to develop a sustainability club, because they're asking for that. And I think building on from the COP26 action that we have seen nothing of, we can start to do that at a grassroots level with students through the schools that we've engaged with. So I think there's some work to do there. That's where we're going next. And it's really quite exciting. I did get quite excited about the whole thing, because I think when I was at the CIOB, I met hundreds of people working, mostly in construction. And obviously, you know, there were architects there and all sorts of designers as well as constructors. And the thing that, I mean, they were kind of a self-selecting group, I guess, the guys who came to the branch meetings or the committee meetings, and who were on the various trustee boards and so on. They were an inspiring bunch. They were amazing. They really believed in the sector, and they wanted to get other people to love it as much as they did. And they were so proud of what they'd achieved. And that was really an formative experience for me. And I really believe, hopefully not naively, that most people in the sector are exactly the same. They love what they do. And they love the fact that when they finish a project, it's there for decades for their grandchildren to see and for them to be proud of. There are a few people who cut corners and walls fall down in schools and fires happen in terrible places. I think those are in the real minority, and we need to try and work, my view, through the professional bodies to try and address that. But generally speaking, the sector is full of really inspiring, passionate people who love what they do. And I want to make more people aware of it, because there are so many youngsters out there who believe, and especially as the education system these days is becoming more and more academically focused, there's no future for them. And this industry, this sector, really needs those practically capable, intelligent people to come and work for us, not because they were disruptive at school and got sent to the FE college and they ended up in the built environment, but because they chose it as the sector they want to work in. And I think that'd be a good choice. My only two of my kids so far have gone on and chose their careers, and one of them is a surveyor, I'm proud to say, which has nothing to do with me, actually. He did it all on his own. But I think it's something if I had known then what I'd do now, I'd have certainly chosen to work in the built environment.
Fantastic. So, yeah, really comprehensive overview no further questions, Your Honour, because you covered all of the kind of discussion points for that section there. Really interesting that it's going for the young people, inspiring young minds to get interest in the built environment, which is such a gap in the built environment. It's not something which is commonly studied at any level. In England, there is the built environment GCSE in Wales, and there's the House of Lords recently approved a built environment GCSE for England. So there are steps happening, but what you're doing with CSTT and the geography lessons, yeah, is another fantastic avenue to go down, and hopefully we can start to capture interest earlier, and this will of course support the diversity in the built environment as well. I've had three brilliant sort of discussions with you all about what you're doing actively in this area. And to wrap up everything, I just wanted to ask all three of you, if I'm a built environment employer listening to this podcast, what advice would you give to me to make my business more diverse and inclusive And why should I be making this a priority? So, Terry, if you could answer first, please.
It's fascinating to me. If you look at the impact, so we've alluded to it already, McKinsey do a lot of these reports. Those companies who work to get more women on their boards, senior levels, they report an increased performance of 25% in performance, so, you know, profit. If those companies also look at EDI, they get a bonus in terms of profit and capability. If they look at ESG, they get a bonus in capability and profit. And there's a trend here, guys. If you work with your workforce to make your workforce happier and to recognise that they are part of something and to share their why, as Boller would put it, so that they actually you're part of their journey in their career, then guess what? That has dividends, not just in terms of saving costs, but actually improving the performance of your business. So what you need to do is to go and find one of those packages which says these are the steps to creating a more diverse workforce. And the London Mayor's done one, which is about black people. I think it's called the Diverse Employers Toolkit, I think it's called. It's brilliant. It's about six steps. Very simple. Anyone can do it. Just follow those steps and it'll work. It's not massive. It's not complicated. It's simple, basic. Room 101, change management in the business. And guess what? It will pay a dividend to your business. So don't be afraid to do it. Lead from the top. Get this cultural competence working from the top of the business and you'll see dividends coming everywhere. I can't see any reason for not doing it.
Thanks, Terry. And Boller, same question, please.
Same question. I'll have to build off Terry's great foundations. I mean, thanks for the plug, Terry. The Mayor of London funded the Inclusive Employers Toolkit. That is the ground zero for any business. I was humbled to have chaired that initiative under the Moving On Up initiative, which is a pan-London young black men's project. But to answer the question, why make it a priority? Well, it's just good business sense. You know, business owners need to understand profit has three levels, people, planet, and profit. But the profit per se is driven by people. And people drive businesses. And businesses have nothing without people. And the way you treat your people depends on how successful your business will be. And those people should be diverse in content and character. So it's a no-brainer from a business perspective, but from a moral perspective, and this is the challenge, from a moral perspective, it's still a challenge to understand why does it make good business sense. And if you want to continue to grow as a business, if you want to continue to attract real talent and retain good talent, you've got to make diversity and inclusion a mission critical priority and not just a tick box or, dare I say, a procurement exercise which makes you look good. Tokenism is worse than real tangible progress as a business. So I'd avoid tokenism, stick to the core values and be morally competent in doing all that you want to do to succeed and make sure that your people reflect you. This is non-negotiable now. This isn't a nice to have. This is just good business sense. So I'll leave it there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Boller. Finally, Teresa, to build on Terry and Boller's answers there, what would you add to this argument in front of built environment employers? This is what you need to be hearing on diversity and inclusion.
Absolutely what they've said about the enriching process of employing a more diverse workforce. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience of running a very successful business for 30 years, and we competed in government contracts, and I would recruit locally for my programs, and we also had, I think, 25% of our staff had some sort of health challenge or disability. And we knocked spots off the big providers, the multi, you know, million pound organisations across the country. We knocked spots off their performance because our own workforce were so diverse, so cohesive and so collaborative. And it's so important that comes from the top. There has to be a commitment there. So there are numerous reports that will indicate how much better off an organisation is with a diverse workforce. But diversity is a much broader thing. You know, just adding women to your board or just, you know, working in a particular local community, that there's a whole range of people that should be included. And it's about, obviously, the best person for the job. I would then say, obviously, go and look at the Building People website. If you haven't registered, please register straight away to access our community organisations, to reach the diverse audiences that we deal with ourselves. If you have events, training, job opportunities, please do put them on our website, advertise them to our network. It's www.buildingpeople.org. And then personally, I would say, I would suggest that employers look at their recruitment process to see exactly how accessible it is to every audience that we've mentioned here. You'd be surprised at just how excluded some groups can be, just from the wording in the adverts or the electronic sift that they employ to create their shortlists. There's a whole process that can be extremely negative to different groups of people. So look at that and see if that can be made to be more easily accessed by those different audiences.
Great stuff. So a real embedding piece. It's not just one area, but in how you communicate and in your actions as well. It's gaining a more reflective and diverse workforce, which will pay dividends, going back to Terry's point when we asked this as well, and will enrich the discussions which are to be had and ideally at the highest level. So much to take in there. I'll definitely be having to listen back because there is a lot to take in from all three of you. And it's really fantastic to hear the work which you are doing with your organisations. And yeah, thank you for sharing your insights. So if you'd like to learn more about Building People, Diverse City Surveyors, or this Chartered Surveyors Training Trust, do Google them or follow Teresa's link, which she gave for Building People. Just a quick Google, you'll be able to find all of the resources and information to do with the three organisations who are doing so much good for the sector. So thank you, Teresa.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bolla.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure. And the panel's been great too, Teresa. Pleasure. And Terry, always a pleasure.
You too.
And thanks, Terry.
My pleasure as well. Thanks a lot, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everyone. And thanks for listening.